Vince, do you want to do some We In, We Out?
Why not? Man, I don't get to do Thursday shows that often, so I enjoy a little We In, We Out. Let's go.
All right. So let's pump this up here on the screen. First one, RJ Oben starting. He says he's out. Are you in or out on RJ Oben starting?
Vince? Well, that means I believe Josh Burnham is listed as the backup at both end positions, correct? So I'm in. Wait, Oben starting. I'm out. I would love to see Josh Burnham get the starting reps. But here's the thing. Let's make a mental note here, Sean, and let's look back on the game from a snap count standpoint and find out who had more snaps, Oben or Burnham, in the Stanford game. Because I don't care who's out there the first play. It doesn't matter to me. It's who's out there when it matters.
Who gets the meaningful snaps.
That's all I care about. I don't care if you're a starter, you know, in name. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. Are you out there when it matters? I want Josh Burnham out there.
I'm curious how much, since Burnham is listed as the number two at both positions, Viper and the field end, like how many snaps is he going to get for a guy who's been out for 3 weeks, you know, 3+ weeks with a high ankle sprain? You know, like how many snaps is he going to get? Like, I guess some of that will be dictated by how Junior Tui Alamaka plays at Viper. But, I mean, he's going to have to play both, I would think. Bryce Young in the mix definitely helps. But I agree with what you're saying. You know, like they'll mix it up. I'm sure we'll see at least five guys when you throw in Bryce Young, if not maybe six, with a little bit of Logan Thomas sprinkled in there as well. So,
yeah.
But the Burnham factor is real. If he's 100%, then that's huge for them coming back this week and going forward.
No, it's massive, yeah.
From Misguided Passion, Riley Leonard has more passing touchdowns than rushing touchdowns in total for the next three games. In or out on that?
I'm in. I think the passing game will be a little bit more of an emphasis. And I think he's starting to come into his own a little bit in the passing game. So I'll be in on that.
I'm trying to remember. So he's got three passing touchdowns in the last two games. And I think it's four rushing touchdowns. Does that sound right? In the last two games?
I'll take your word for it. I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday.
He's actually got 3 and 3.
Okay, so he's evened up.
He's got three of each. So the question is, more passing touchdowns? Yes, I'll be in on that. Over the next three games, he'll have more passing touchdowns.
And Andrew says he doesn't care. Running touchdowns count the same.
They
do.
I
didn't say I cared. That wasn't the question. The question was, which will be more? That's all. I agree with you, Andrew. I could care less as long as the ball gets into the end zone. I really could care less as to how it happens.
Exactly. What I do, you know, what I don't want to see and what I don't think we'll see, hopefully, is, you know, this, oh, Riley Leonard's got to stand in the pocket and, you know, work on the, like,
yeah, I don't want to
let
see
him
that
play
either.
His game. They got to let him play his game and let the game come to him and, you know, just kind of let it flow from there. But he obviously showed in the first half, especially last week, that he could be better, or 2 weeks ago, you know, last game. Irish in the bluegrass. Jadarian Price bounces back in a big way after his fumble/benching against Louisville. In or out on that?
He'll bounce back, but I don't know if it'll be in a big way. I still think that they trust Jeremiah Love more, and I just don't know that Jadarian Price is going to get the opportunity to bounce back in a big way. Like, what's the definition of a big bounce back? You know what I mean? I don't think he'll fumble again. I think he'll be fine there. But I'll be out that he bounces back in a big way.
Yeah, what your definition of big way is, I think, is the question.
Yeah.
I mean, based on what we've seen from him, I'll go with what you're saying. I think that he holds on to the ball. He doesn't put the ball on the ground, and he hits at least one big run, which is pretty much what he's been averaging, you know, with the exception of Louisville since he was out for most of it. I think he'll hit at least one big run against Stanford. So if that's a big way, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, Yeah, no, if that's a big way, then yeah, I'll be on board with that. Yeah, that's fine.
From Ballpeen Shillelagh, a frigid sub 32 degrees game day is preferable to a sweltering 90 degree game day. In or out on that?
Like, okay, first of all, when you said game day, of course, I thought about the TV show. I would much rather have it be cold than hot. Yes, because I think you can bundle up. You can get, you know, I don't want it to be negative, you know, 10 or something like that. But I can get on board with like 30. Like that's fine. I can dress for 30. You can't really dress for 90 plus. You know what I mean? I can't stand the heat. I would much rather have it be about 30 degrees. I can get on board with that.
Honestly, I think I would take the 90 degrees, like if I'm playing in it, you know, like coaching or watching or well, even watching, like, would you rather sit in the stands and bundle up and freeze or sit out there in 90 degrees? I think that I would take the 90 because once you start playing, you're sweating. And I would rather be warm than, you know, get that sweat kind of flowing. And then you go stand on the sideline when you come off the field and it's 32 below zero out there and you're cooling down again. And like, you just kind of stay just freezing cold all day. So I would take the 90, actually. Wow. I don't think that you feel the heat once you're playing as much as you feel the cold myself. Like visually things look great, you know, like see your breath and all those different things, but I would take the heat actually.
Wow. I think it's harder to breathe in the heat. I don't like it. Don't like it. I hate the sun.
You hate the sun.
When it's 95 sweltering, nope, I'm out.
Go to the freaking moon if you hate.
I'm out. I'm out. The sun will kill you on the moon. Oh, that's a hard out. I'm pass.
Another one from Ballpeen.
Okay.
The most difficult part about maintaining success in modern college football is player focus and culture, as evidenced by whatever Florida State is doing. We in or we out on that?
Oh, I think I'm in on that one. I think in collegiate athletics, no matter what sport you're playing, it's all about focus and culture. I mean, culture can overcome a heck of a lot of things, and a lot of times culture can overcome talent if it's done correctly. So I think culture and focus is absolutely critical for a successful collegiate program. Critical. Yeah,
it's like I've always said, you know, just like what makes a guy truly tick, and you know, like getting in there to like what a guy is going to be like, you know, when he faces adversity, all those things has got to be the toughest thing to read when you're out there recruiting, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
You lose a couple of guys in the locker room and things can turn in a big hurry. Like what's going on at Florida State? Like, I have no idea.
Well, that's,
you know, is it purely talent? You know, I'm like, they've had to, you know, they leaned into the transfer portal.
There it is.
In a big way. And I think that's part of what's going on at USC as well. Is 100%. Like, they've had to lean into the portal so much that, like, you can't just create a culture when you're bringing in 30 guys a year.
And, exactly.
You know, 30 new guys, you know, like, not even freshmen, but guys who have been in other programs and stuff like that. When you're bringing, like, that many guys into your program every year, I don't think you can build a true culture. Ultimately, you've got to bring in your own people as freshmen and develop that culture from the ground up, I think.
Yeah, I think you can win some games, you know, obviously with right.
I'm not saying that transfers are bad and you can't win with transfers. Right. I'm just saying you can't win with that many.
Build your program surrounded by transfers. That doesn't work. And at least we haven't seen it work yet. You know what I mean? Like we saw bits and pieces of it, you know, Florida State, I guess, last year. But the reality is that's not how you build a program. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And I'm sure eventually a program will prove me wrong. But up to this point, it has not worked. And I just don't see it working because it is about culture and it is about, you know, development and all of those things. That's what collegiate sports is all about. It's one of the reasons I love it. So I just the transfer portal can be helpful if used correctly, but I just don't think you can build your program around it. Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike other apps on Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. I'm a Bears fan, so this one gets me really excited. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks because it's gone when September ends. Think Tyreek Hill will get more than 90.5 yards in week one? Aaron Jones runs for more than 66.5 yards? Cook up hot takes with your friends and win real money this football season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Prize Picks also has college picks all ready to go for you as well. Get in before game one hits, and you can predict how many passing yards your favorite college quarterback will hit. For me, I think Riley Leonard's going to go above 2,550.5 yards, so I'm going to take that one. And I'm going to combine it with Quinn Ewers to throw 2,999.5 yards. Put those together, and bing, bang, boom, baby. I'm going to be a winner. You just wait and see. I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of depositing my first $10, and I received an instant $10 bonus. If you have the skills, you can play for a shot at turning your $10 into $1,000. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code IRISH on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, run your game. You've had Wendy's nugs dipped in sauce, but have you had them covered in sauce? Wendy's new saucy nugs takes the crispy and spicy nugs that you love and turn them up to 11. Choose between flavors like buffalo, honey barbecue, garlic parm, or if you're a real heat seeker, try spicy ghost pepper only on Wendy's signature spicy nugs. I dare ya. That's 7 delicious ways to try the nugs you already love. Pick a flavor, grab some extra napkins, and prepare to nug like you've never nugged before. For a whole new way to nug, it's gotta be Wendy's at participating U.S. Wendy's.
Yeah, going back to the weather, Father David says, perpetual fall, short hoodie weather.
Yes.
I mean, like, if we're talking football, and even... I'd like it a little bit warmer for baseball, but it, you know, like baseball to me is like even worse in 90 degrees, like not playing, but you know, like even trying to watch, like
just
that's
sitting
worse.
In the stand. Like yeah. I've gone to games in July or August or whatever, and you're sitting in the stands and there's just no shade and
you're sweating on yourself,
feeding down on you. Like that's awful. Like, that is an awful, awful feeling.
Yeah. I would absolutely rather, you know, being a hoodie and some
jeans hoodie weather.
Or whatever. Yep.
Hoodie and jeans weather, man. Like that is my absolute favorite. And that happens in fall and it also happens in the spring. And those are by far my two favorite seasons because fall is football and spring is baseball. Like those are my two favorite seasons and it's not close because I love hoodie and jeans weather, man. Love it.
Another one from Ballpeen. Kenny Minchie sees the field for at least 2 more games this year, and Carr sees the field at least 1 more time this year. In or out on that?
Oh, I'm in on that. I think that could definitely happen. Yeah, for sure. I think it definitely. Neither one of them will see the field more than 4 times total.
I think
we can all agree on that.
This is, and this is totally score related.
You know? Correct.
Like, this is score related, and they should. 1 more time for Carr, 2 more times for Minchie. Yep, absolutely.
Sure. And look, this is all under the caveat that there are no injuries to Leonard. You know what I mean? To Riley Leonard. That's the key for this whole thing. If Riley Leonard gets hurt and is out for the season, then we revisit that, and I would be out on that because it'll be more.
Couple here from Indy Forever 72. We in or we out? Kirby Lambert gets planked. Time going forward and looks good enough to work himself into the starting lineup.
I'm out because they're not going to do that. I don't see them doing halftime or split, split time with the offensive line. They had this bye week and literally nothing changed. So I don't see that happening. I'm out.
I agree. And they gave these guys some looks during the bye week as well. We're going to touch more in detail on that during Countdown to Kickoff on tomorrow's show. Some comments from Mike Denbrock about, you know, how they kind of gave some offensive linemen some looks and things like that. So I'm going to be out, you know, like I don't see it.
Yeah.
Just based on where they are right now. I don't see it. It doesn't sound like, and when you listen to Marcus Freeman's comments the other day, it just doesn't sound like Kirby Lambert is there. He's talking about him more as a guy for the future than a guy for right now. We in, we out. Mitchell Evans rebounds in the remaining games and goes from currently 10 catches to 30 for the season, from 82 yards to 320, and from 0 to 5 touchdowns. So he's saying Mitchell Evans will end up with 30 receptions, 320 yards, 5 touchdowns by the end of the year. In or out?
I was contemplating being in on the first two stats. The last one, I'm very out. I don't think Mitchell Evans gets to 5 touchdowns. I don't see that happening. But I could see the other stuff happen. I could see 10 to 30. I could see him going up to 30 catches. I could see that. I could see him having over 300 yards of offense, you know, receiving yards. I could see both of those happening, but I don't see 5 touchdowns happening. Not at this point.
Yeah, and this is what I would say, what Andrew says, out because Denbrock doesn't seem that interested in getting tight ends involved. I think that there is.
Especially in the red zone.
Yeah.
Like the red zone is number 13.
Yeah.
Or maybe number 4. That's it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's what it has been so far. And so, yeah, so I just, there are things that they could be doing with Mitchell Evans and the tight, you know, and again, now how much of this is Mitchell Evans still finding his way back from his injury, which is still less than a year old and all that kind of stuff. But they don't seem like there is as much of an emphasis on the tight ends. So I'm going to be out. I'm with you. Like, the first two numbers, the receptions and the yards, I can see getting close to that, but there's no way he gets 5 touchdown catches this year. That's, he'll be lucky, I think, if he gets 3 at this point.
Do we even think a wide receiver would get 5 touchdown catches total?
Right. I mean, Leonard has 3 touchdown passes right now. Correct. So I can't see Mitchell Evans getting 5 in the next 7 games.
Bingo. Very difficult.
We in or we out? Jeremiah Love currently averaging over 11 carries a game. That goes up over the remaining games to an average of 18 per game. Vince, this is a massive out.
Oh, my God. There's no way. Not even close.
There's no way. Because, you know, just, you know, again, like when Riley Leonard is getting the carries that he gets, and then you've got Jadarian Price and Love essentially splitting carries, we all think that he needs to get more touches, but there's no way it's going to go from 11 to 18 at this point.
You'll be lucky if it gets to 14.
Yeah.
On average. There's just absolutely no way that that's going to happen. No chance. And honestly, you don't want it to happen. You can say what you want about Jeremiah Love, and that's fine, but you do not want him to have that many carries in a game. He'll break down. I'm telling you, that is not good. That's not good. You do not want that to be the case. Out.
Big out. And, you know, and I know this was talked about. I can't remember. And I know it came up at least once here. It might have been all the way back during training camp. But when they were recruiting Jeremiah Love, his mom's concern was, you know, like, I don't want you beating him up and giving him 30 carries a game.
That was a huge reason he came to Notre Dame, was that promise that they weren't going to wear him out before he got to the NFL.
Right.
That will never happen.
Yeah.
Never happen.
Jeff says he thinks it should be an in. You know, again, like 18 carries a game is not a huge workload, but from where he is right now to go from 11 to 18 a game, and you've got Riley Leonard, who's averaging about the same amount of carries per game, and Jadarian Price, who's just a little bit fewer carries per game. And again, when you look at the schedule that they've got, they're not just going to start pounding Jeremiah Love all the time. Like, you know, again, no, I get it, Andrew. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be getting 18. I'm saying he's not going to get 18. That's all I'm saying. They're just, what we've seen with how they've split the carries is just how they're going to continue to split the carries. I just don't see them all of a sudden, you know, drastically changing the way they're going about this and changing things up. I mean, we've wanted it just to bump up three or four more carries per game, even since the first couple of games, and that hasn't happened. So there's just no way they're going to all of a sudden start force feeding him that many, you know, seven more carries per game. It just won't happen. There's a difference between would we like to see it and will it happen? And I'm saying it won't happen. So
I don't even want to see it.
You're completely fine with how they've got it split up.
A few more would be okay, but I don't want them up to 18. That's too many. That's too many. You are becoming way too one-dimensional at that point. I don't know. I don't want that to be the case. I don't. That's me.
Yep.
Audric Estime didn't even average 18 carries a game.
Yeah.
By the way.
See, I wish I was a domer, says carries versus touches. Wouldn't mind him seeing getting more touches. But again, this goes back to like screen passes and stuff like that and the lack of, you know, what they've been able to do with the running backs and really anyone else, because screen passes aren't just running backs. Receivers, Mitchell Evans, for example, you know, like a tight end screen, different things like that. But yeah, I mean, Jeremiah Love as a receiver has 11 total carries. So he's just over two receptions per game. So he's getting 13 touches per game right now.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing the touches get up to about 16-ish.
Yeah.
That would be okay with that. But like I said, if Audric Estime isn't even at 18, Jeremiah Love's not going to be at 18. Because you all, like you said, you've got other options. You know, the only option really last year was Audric Estime. You've got Jeremiah Love. You've got Jadarian Price. You've got Riley Leonard. It's not going to happen.
Yep.
There's only so many plays, folks.
I don't disagree with this, Andrew. Like, he's saying that he spends too much time on the side. I don't disagree, and we've talked about it before, because they're obviously bringing in Aeneas Williams now more in third down situations. We saw that even in the Louisville game when the game was close. You know, like, again, he's there. They've got a dedicated third down back, and that's when they're bringing Aeneas Williams in. And the fact that you didn't have Jadarian Price factored into that as well. But, you know, like I've said before, third down is the most important down in a series, and you're taking your best offensive weapon off the field in third downs on third downs more times than not. I would definitely like to see him out there on third down more, but, you know, there's a way where you can have Williams out there and Price out there, but they're not doing that either. So Domer Grizz, if Al Washington's recruiting could match the work he's done to get guys like Junior Tuialamaka, Logan Thomas, and Bryce Young ready to play meaningful snaps this year, then he would be a top five defensive line coach in the country. In or out on that?
I mean, I guess I will be tentatively in on that. I mean, Junior Tuialamaka has been around for a long time. So, you know, Logan Thomas obviously is a young kid. Bryce Young is a young kid. So, I mean, that's impressive. So, you know, play devil's advocate. Bryce Young comes in as a true freshman. Is that Al Washington getting him ready, or was he ready because of who his dad is? Right? I think there's an argument.
Well, but that's selectively picking Al Washington apart.
Totally agree. But know? I also think it's selective to say,
you know, this against him, then you have to at least give him credit when a guy is out there producing.
That's fine. So, but like, it took 3 years to get Junior Tuialamaka to be any way type of ready for any kind of game time. Right.
Well, he's a converted linebacker too, and it's only been two years for him actually as a Viper. So,
but he would have never played if there weren't injuries ahead of him either. He develops talent. That's fine. He needs more talent. And being a college coach, you got to do more than just coach up the talent. You got to be able to recruit it too. So, yeah, I mean, if I just don't know if I would use these three guys as like the the precipice of getting ready to play college football. That's all I'll say. There's other guys that are better than them that he also got ready to play.
That's what I was getting ready to say. I mean, you know, and we've talked about it before. You still have to credit him for Boubacar Traore coming in and being able to play in a relatively short amount of time. So, like, you might be frustrated that they brought in R.J. Oben and R.J. Oben's not doing anything. But at the same time, you got Jordan Batelho, who's finally stepped up. And, I mean, it's like, oh, look what happens when a guy actually devotes some time. Like, it's amazing seeing photos of Jordan Batelho from a year ago, just like as big and thick as he is compared to what he looked like when he was in much better shape coming into this season. It's like, oh, you actually focus and dedicate yourself, and now you're producing. But
so what happens when you're bought in? It's amazing.
Right. But again, you know, when he wasn't producing, Washington gets the blame for that. You know, so like, I think that there's definitely give and take. And part of this, as they do continue to recruit and bring in their own guys, I'm not saying it's all going to magically solve itself, but I do think that we're going to start to see a more consistent level of play across the board than probably what we've seen in the last couple of years so far. That's just based on some of the results we've seen from some of these young recruits and such. 937 Irish, in or out. The two most difficult remaining games are the two service academies due to style of play and location of the games. Are we out on that?
Could not be more farther out on this one than any question that we've had so far. So I'm out. Their style is different. Okay. Notre Dame plays them every year. I don't think the style is, and the location means zero to me. So no, I'm out. I'm very far on this one. Now, if you wanted to combine those two and say that's like one game and then put USC, okay. I'd be okay to be in on that one. Location has nothing to do with it, number one. And number two, they're both good, really good teams this year. So that's part of it, right? But I still think that Notre Dame should handle both of them. And I don't care where they're playing it. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. I think maybe they're a little bit closer, you know, in score than they were in the past because both teams are obviously better this year. But again, you know, it's like you hate to say, well, who have they played? But who have they played? I mean, you know, like, okay, great. Army beat Temple. You know, it's like, okay.
And yeah. Navy beat Memphis. I think that was one of their big wins because Memphis beat Florida State. But is that really an accomplishment at this point? Because they put 56 up on Memphis, but they also gave up 44. Okay. I think you got to remember that.
I mean, athletically, with what Notre Dame has on offense, it should both games should just be total mismatches on that side of the ball, if nothing else.
Could not agree more. And now, look, Navy's going to be undefeated when they come to see Notre Dame because they're off this week and then they've got a 500 Charlotte team the week before they see Notre Dame. They'll be undefeated going to Notre Dame or, you know, going into the Notre Dame game where Notre Dame plays at Giant Stadium or MetLife Stadium, whatever they call it these days. And they literally play there every other year. Like MetLife Stadium is not a foreign place for Notre Dame. So the location means absolutely zero to me. And so they should roll Navy. I'm sorry. You should always roll Navy. I love Navy. I love what they stand for. I love everything about Navy, but you should roll Navy. That's the bottom line. You should roll Navy. Always. And I realize Notre Dame has lost to Navy before. I get it. But, you know, if you're talking about location, they went to Ireland last year and won by 39.
And rolled Navy. Yes.
I mean, just no.
From bracket cover three, in or out, Jordan Clark is the biggest positive surprise of the offseason, and R.J. Oben is the most disappointing offseason transfer. So you got multiple in or outs there.
Yeah, I think I'm on both of those, to be honest with you. I think Jordan Clark has absolutely been the biggest positive surprise. He's playing really, really well. And yeah, I'm not even going to bring up the stupid spitting, headbutting, whatever.
Look, we've talked about it at least twice this week, so you don't have.
I'm gonna chalk that up to just being dumb, and everybody makes dumb mistakes. So his play on the football field has been outstanding. It's been outstanding. So I think he has been a super positive surprise, and unfortunately, RJ Oben has not lived up to the billing.
Yeah,
I thought he came in. You know, it supposedly was going to be the better of the two defensive end transfers in the last 2 years. And that has certainly not been the case. So I am very disappointed up to this point.
Yet Jordan Clark has been really good. And I know that there were some questions about him coming from Arizona State. And when we talked to him in the spring, we found out that he was really banged up and playing through some injuries last year. And when you look at him this year, man, it's like his anticipation and just like he is always around the ball, and he was just always making plays around the ball. So I have been very pleasantly surprised by him. And Oben, I expected a lot closer to the kind of production that they got from Javonte Jean-Baptiste last year. Like when you look at the production that Oben had at Duke, like he had produced at a higher level than JJB coming out of Duke than JJB did coming out of Ohio State. And I thought we were going to see more from Oben this year. So I'm in on both of those. Now, going back to what we were just talking about with Army, Navy, Anthony says Alabama should always roll Vandy. Yes.
They're also in the same conference. They're also both Power Four teams. So
correct. Correct on both cases. And major, major difference. Why is Vandy better this year? The transfer portal. They brought in Diego. Mm-hmm. What's the guy's last name? It's escaping me right
now. The quarterback. Yeah.
Selva. What's his name? You know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They brought in a transfer portal quarterback who was a 3-star. I think he was even maybe a 2-star guy coming, out of high school, went to New Mexico State. And boom, he comes to Vanderbilt, gives him a chance to play in the SEC. And look at Pavia. Thank you, Tommy. Look at what he's doing right now. And they added a bunch of other transfer portal guys as well. Who does not benefit? Who benefits the least of any FBS teams in the country from the transfer portal? Army, Navy, and Air Force. You don't transfer to any of those schools.
Transfer out.
Right. Well, like you talk about, should Alabama always roll Vanderbilt?
Yeah,
they should. Obviously, they have for a long time. It took 40 years before Vanderbilt finally beat Alabama. But the transfer portal is proving to be the great equalizer for a lot of teams. Now, again, going back to what we were talking about earlier, you don't want to have to, 20, 30 guys a year and that kind of thing. But, that's – transfer portal is like if it did not exist, Vandy didn't win that game last week. So
completely agree.
Big difference.
Light it. Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Urban Meyer. This fall, the game changes. Join me, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram, and broadcaster Rob Stone as we bring you a new perspective on football and culture every week. We will be joined by the biggest name in sports and talk about everything inside and outside of the lines. Let us guide you through a new era of college football. Watch Triple Option on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Matt Leinart.
I've got a podcast called Throwbacks with actor Jerry Farrar, where we'll be talking all things sports, but also so much more.
We'll give you the behind-the-scenes stories from my days as the quarterback on an iconic college football team to Jerry's days as a star on an iconic TV series.
So subscribe to Throwbacks on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
So one other. With all the injuries, the following positions are currently deepest in terms of quality in the following order. Number one, linebacker.
Good Lord.
Number two, running back. Number three, cornerback. Number three,
quarterback. You can't include Hurd and Clark in the corners. They're not both corners.
Let me get through the list here. Number five, defensive line. Number six, safety. Number seven, wide receiver. Number eight, tight end. Number nine, offensive line. He says riddled with injury. So do you agree with that order? Well, Hurd and Clark technically aren't corners, but obviously they stepped up and played corner when they needed them to against Louisville.
But Rod Hurd didn't play corner against Louisville. Clark played corner against Louisville. Right? Are we including him because he's a nickel?
I don't.
I mean, Hurd is a safety. Hurd's a safety. He's not a corner. He's a safety.
I mean,
Clark played corner against Louisville.
The depth at corner is still more about Leonard Moore than
correct
than Hurd. So he included Hurd there. Depth of quality, because again, like deepest in terms of quality, he included Hurd and Clark. I mean, those were emergency situations, essentially. Like, depth at corner, especially now with no Jaden Mickey
depth at corner
on the team, is still a concern.
Corner is terrible. That has to go down. That has to be much more down. Cornerback is one injury away from having like a potential walk-on in the depth chart. Like, corner has to go. Corner is way more down the list. So I'll disagree with corner at number three. I would say, look, quarterback is four or five deep for a one position, right? A one player position. I would move quarterback up. I would move corner back down. I'd move wide receiver up because I think that they're still pretty deep. Right. And you can make your arguments for why they haven't been as successful or whatever. But a lot of that also has to do with the quarterback and the offensive line. But they're still deep. There's still plenty of talent at wide receiver. So I would move wide receiver up. Other than that, I guess it's fine. So I guess I'm out. I guess I'm out as far as the way this list is set up, because I would move three or four different positions around.
Yeah, it's very detailed. Like,
there's a lot going on here, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, offensive line, like currently deepest. Yeah, like if you're going currently, because remember, like the offensive line, you know, their depth has been tested. Safety's not particularly deep. Like, wide receiver is actually very deep. They just haven't produced very much. So exactly. I would put receiver. You've got to put receiver higher on the list. Quarterback, I would definitely put up on the list. Running back, I would actually probably put at the top of the list. So, yeah, I think that, and I'm just going to be out on your order. I think we could nitpick on where we were,
right?
You know, where we would put all of them, but I've got to be out on that order. So, okay. So, Anthony loves Navy. I seriously hope that the analysis before the Navy game does not become lazy and simply dismiss Navy as triple option team. But that's what they are. They're an option team.
Right. They do it out of shotgun now sometimes, but they're still, they're still a primarily option team. So, Anthony, look, we're going to give Navy all of their roses when it's time to talk about that game. They're going to be undefeated going into the Notre Dame game. And they're going to have a loss coming out of it, okay? Like, that's just what's going to happen. You can have all the respect you want for Navy, and that's fine.
I'm not saying, they won't score, all these different things. And Notre Dame plays them every year. And the fact that this is going to be Al Golden's third time coaching against Navy, like, every year that becomes more an advantage for a defensive coordinator like Al Golden when he's already shown what he can do. Like, you can talk about, you know, the rushing yards that the Navy quarterback has and, all these different things, but he's not out there making plays independent of himself. Everything is about the read. You know, it's like the first read that he makes, is he going to give it to the fullback or not? Is he going to keep it himself? You know, is he going to is he going to roll? Is he going to pitch? All these different things. And from a defensive standpoint, it is still assignment football. It's, do you carry out the assignment? That's ultimately what it comes down to. I don't know what else to tell you, Anthony. They're option teams. And if you're going to tell me that Notre Dame shouldn't be able to beat an option team every year. I will disagree with you. Like, because of the athletes that Notre Dame has, Notre Dame should be able to beat an option team every single year. That doesn't mean that the option team can't make things uncomfortable for you at times. You know, like, the most important part, singular most important thing that happens against an option team, and I'm not saying that there aren't other important things as well, it's first down. Like, can you win first down and make it second down and 8 as opposed to second down and even 5? Because if it's second down and 5, the odds favor the triple option team greatly, because then all they need to do is get 2.5 yards on the next two plays to get the next first down.
100%. It's literally,
can you keep them behind the chains?
Correct.
After first down. Yep. That's what you have to do. Can you win first down? That's the building block right there for the defense.
Don't disagree with that in any way. And listen, here, Notre Dame, Navy, last 3 years, right? With Al Golden at the helm of the defense, okay? Notre Dame has won those games, grand total of 111 to 41 points-wise. 111 to 41. Two out of those three games, Navy hasn't even scored in double digits, okay? 2 years ago, it was 35-32, so it was a close game. 3 years ago, it was 42-3. Last year, it was 34-6. So, look, Notre Dame should win. And somebody in the chat already said, if Notre Dame happens to lose that game, it's more about what Notre Dame didn't do as opposed to what Navy did do.
Right.
And I could not agree more to that. Right. I'm not saying that Notre Dame can't lose. I said they shouldn't lose. They shouldn't lose. They should not lose to Navy. They have lost to Navy, but they've also played like crap when they've lost to Navy.
Correct.
That it's not about what Navy does. It's about what Notre Dame does or doesn't do. And that's a hill I will die on always. I will always look, Notre Dame didn't lose to Northern Illinois because Northern Illinois is a great team. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois because they played like garbage. That's why Notre Dame lost. But they did lose. If they lose to Army or Navy, it's going to be the same exact
thing. Northern Illinois has lost twice since then. Should Notre Dame always beat a MAC team? Yes.
Yes, they should.
Because before week two, they had always beaten MAC teams. They had never lost to a MAC team before this year. Came close, but they didn't. Look, Navy is coming up in 2 weeks. I'll tell you, I think it was Joe who said, haven't heard of a single coach alive who likes to play an option team. I mean, again, they make things, the reason why most of the time is because, it's a one-off,
Correct.
Like you Correct. See that offense once a year and you want to move on. That's why I was saying last year that I would favor just opening up every season against Navy, because you get extra time during the off season to prepare for Navy. You go into week one, you play them, and then you never have to play that, that offense again, unless now you've got another service academy at it. It'll, option tenants and all that stuff. They have different wrinkles, Army and Navy. They're not exactly the same, but they're both based on the option. But what I was going to say is, someone who played against the wing T option offense every year in high school was one Jesse Stiers. And I think he averaged like 20 tackles a game in those games, because he was plugged those gaps, baby. That's what it was. So everybody loves the whiteboard. And obviously everyone wants to talk about Navy, even though we got Stanford coming up this week and Georgia Tech coming up next week. But Jesse will drag that whiteboard in here and he will give you his keys to facing the option in 2 weeks. So until then, let's just put all the Army and Navy stuff on the back burner.